The Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll recap the Miami Heat's win against the Philadelphia 76ers and get to some of your tweets about the game.
Vintage Dwayne Wade, Rodney Magruder returns, and we'll talk about the other spotlight performances from the night. Let's get to the show.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRack Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRack Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
Dwayne Wade scored 15 of the Heat's final 17 points of the game. 15 points in the final 4 minutes and 57 seconds. This was, like you said, David, at the start, vintage Dwayne Wade. Wade checked in with 5 minutes and 55 seconds left. All right, we're going to run down these, and we're going to run down the game from there pretty much. The Heat were down 86 to 82, and Miami basically said, look, Wade, take us home. This has been sort of the case since Dwayne Wade came back to Miami, right? Is that Spoelstra, it seems like, is going to Wade more and more down the stretch of these games, especially when they're close. And it hasn't exactly worked out, but it did tonight, right? It did tonight against Philadelphia. At one point, the Heat were down three, and Wade had that pump fake from the left corner and drew the foul on the Sixers and then went to the line. And again, vintage Dwayne Wade. The pump fake worked. Hit all three free throws at the line, tied the game at 100, and then inexplicably fouled Ben Simmons. And this is where I really want to start this conversation, David, because he fouls Ben Simmons for no reason. I think there was a miscommunication, right? Eric Spoelstra said to foul if he missed the free throw. He thought he said foul either way. So he fouls him, despite making the final free throw to tie the game. So Ben Simmons then goes to the line. The weird thing about, like, look, you're giving Ben Simmons now free points. The 76ers are giving him free points. But
yeah, they were over the limit at the time, too.
They were over the limit, right. It ended up working out for Miami because Simmons only makes one of the two free throws. And in that fourth quarter, Philadelphia, of the 6 field goals they made, 4 of them were three-pointers. So they were making shots from beyond the arc. I mean, if that had been a three, Miami's chances for winning is not nearly as good, right?
Yeah.
But they do take the lead, 101 to 100. Dwayne Wade comes back on the other end. Philadelphia, give them credit, played good defense, but Wade hit him with that step back long two, gave Miami a 102 to 101 lead with 5.9 seconds left. And that was really key because if you remember, and I'm sure you do, David. Wade missed the go-ahead shot the last time these two teams played right before the All-Star break. He made it this time.
Yeah, that impressive performance, man. What can you say about it, to be honest with you? It seemed like he was just dialed in very early on. When he hit that first three-pointer, there was a kind of smooth rhythm to his shooting that we haven't seen since his return, and he just seemed to build more and more confidence. There was one point there where he took a floater in the lane, even with three defenders around him, more than enough time left on the shot clock, but he just felt so comfortable that he didn't mind unloading this kind of off-balance floater shot in the lane with, like I said, multiple defenders. And you could tell that he was getting it going. What were his final numbers there? I know he finished with 27 points on 10 of 16 shooting, 2 of 4 from three-point range, and again, 5 of 5 on the line, including those three crucial free throws. Also finished with 3 steals and a block. Only 2 turnovers. One of them was particularly egregious where he was looking to a cutter that didn't quite cut. But, you know, that's just the kind of timing that he needs to get down. But overall.
Oh, that was that the one to Goran Dragic?
Yeah, where Goran kind of stayed planted in the baseline and then he expected him to curl around, but he did not. Overall, though.
That was funny because on the very next possession, too, Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic mixed up a rotation. And I think it was Wade's fault because Wade was the guy who kind of let the guy go to the rim. It ended up in a wide open Philadelphia dunk, too. So that cadence isn't quite there. Right. It never really was.
Right.
You know, we kind of ignore that part that Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic never really played that well together when they were both in Miami. Right. They're still not necessarily playing. And it's I don't think it's anything other than they just. They play very different styles and at different paces.
Yeah. We'll get to other parts of the game, but I've got to bring this up because I think obviously Wade's performance tonight is the key story of the game. One, I've seen some scuttle on Twitter about whether or not it was a bad shot to begin with. That clutch shot, despite the fact that he made it, was that the kind of shot that you think Wade should have been taking at the end of the game? It's kind of tough to say. My own feelings about it is that he's made those shots a countless number of times, and that's part of his game, is to kind of over dribble at times and then just come up big in clutch moments. And it has happened to work out that way today. My fear is that we're going to rely on him too much when, as you pointed out earlier, he just hasn't been able to come up with those shots. He hasn't been hitting those regularly. He does seem a little leaner since his return to Miami, so maybe he's getting acclimated, getting into a little bit better shape. And so maybe that's why there was a little bit more smoothness in that rhythm tonight. But overall, I don't know if you want to necessarily rely on Dwayne Wade at 3 years to kind of take over games.
Let's pause. Let's put a pin in that conversation, because we have some tweets about that exact thing that we're going to get to a little later on. But some other call outs from this game, in addition to Dwayne Wade, really just sort of being the headline, like you said. But I thought three guys in particular played really good defense, and Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, number one. I mean, Richardson had a pair of steals, back-to-back steals in that fourth quarter that kind of gave Miami the energy that they needed and sort of was feasting on. And it was important because that was a moment where Joel Embiid was on the bench, and Miami had to play well in those moments. Embiid was on the bench. Embiid in the game, he was a plus 12. And I think at the start of the fourth quarter, he was plus 17, right? That was a huge deal for them. Embiid comes back in the fourth quarter, almost immediately picks up his fifth foul with about a little bit more than 10 minutes left, and then sits for the next 5 minutes. And then really wasn't able to be as much of a factor as he was earlier in that game. Justice Winslow's defense on Ben Simmons in particular was really, really strong. I mean, Ben Simmons has got, 5 inches on Justice Winslow? And he was able to he managed to hold Simmons to 11 points on 4 of 9 shooting and forced him to commit 4 turnovers. Not all those turnovers you can credit for Winslow, but Winslow made things difficult for him all night. And then Hassan Whiteside, I thought his defense was pretty phenomenal considering the matchup that he was going against Embiid. Embiid, who likes to get onto the perimeter. Philadelphia likes to run a lot of screens around him. And there was a moment there in the fourth quarter in particular where Whiteside was switched onto Ben Simmons on the perimeter and held his own. And Simmons, you could see the spark in Simmons' eye when he saw Whiteside on him, switched on him, and he attacked him. Simmons went for the attack, but Whiteside was able to backpedal fluidly and managed to disrupt Simmons' shot at the rim. Now, Goran Dragic ended up fouling Ben Simmons from behind, and that was unfortunate, but Whiteside's defense was really good in that situation. So a lot of big performances down the stretch of this game.
Yeah, I mean, Whiteside looked particularly engaged, something we haven't seen from him regularly, and not of late in particular. It was the matchup, I think. Like, he kind of sensed that he was going to get dominated early on, and Embiid started off particularly well against Whiteside, hitting a couple threes and just showing the versatility and overall impact of his game that unfortunately outclasses him over Whiteside. But Whiteside was up for the challenge. Look, he dove for the ball at one point. Like, when was the last time we've seen that? I don't know that I've ever seen that.
A few times. Yeah. You're right. His energy was up for this one.
Look, he was bringing the ball up court, which I did not particularly like. I thought, although he didn't wind up leading to a turnover, I was concerned that it might be. Like, he was trying to prove that he could be like Embiid in some sense. And, kind of, again, also stretching the floor. Like, he was shooting the jumper a little bit more, especially early on. And then he got away from that, and he started focusing on what he does best. And that's when he was able to really dominate, was when he was in the paint against Amir Johnson when Embiid was on the bench. He really seemed to take it up a notch offensively, where he was just getting really good positioning, finishing around the basket, hit his free throws as well, finished, three of eight of the line. I thought he was hitting – actually, I felt like he was hitting him more, but I'm surprised to see he didn't hit at least 50% of the shots. But 6 of 11 shooting. So, I mean, good overall night, 11 rebounds and 3 blocks in key moments of the game. So
3 assists, I mean.
Yeah, well, he's a good passer now, at least in the second half of the season.
I thought another big part of this game, I mentioned a little bit about this with Josh Richardson and then Ben Simmons turning the ball over 4 times. But the Heat forced 23 turnovers in the game, scored 26 points off of those turnovers. Again, I can't drive this point home enough. That is a huge. That is one of my stats. That is probably the stat that I'm watching in these final few games of the season, is how many turnovers can the Heat force, because they had been at near the bottom of the league in forcing turnovers for most of the season. And then even more importantly, how many points are they scoring off of those turnovers? And, you know, that those Josh Richardson turnovers specifically, like those are huge, because not only is he forcing the turnovers, but he's grabbing the ball and he's scoring at the other end. That's the sort of thing that we saw with the big three Heat a lot, right? It's just a one-man fast break, which has been very rare in Miami for the last few seasons. But even if it's not a one-man fast break, you know, we've seen things like Richardson forcing a turnover, kicking it out to Goran Dragic, running down to the other side and doing and scoring in transition like that. Those are all going to be key. And then just some injury, some players leaving because of injuries, players coming back from injuries. Rodney Magruder returned. He played 9 minutes. He made a three-pointer. That was good to see him. Kelly Olynyk also came back, played some key minutes in that game. And then, unfortunately, Wayne Ellington hurt his quad in the middle of the game. He left in the first half. And then Tyler Johnson, who bumped knees with Ben Simmons at some point, also left the game. Neither Tyler Johnson nor Wayne Ellington returned in the game. And we're still waiting to see at the time of us recording this what the prognosis is going to be on that. But hopefully they're not gone too long, because it'd be nice to have a full squad, you know? I don't know if that's happened this season.
I mean, I saw in the broadcast, they showed Eric Spoelstra before the game, and he was beaming. Like the idea of being able to bring back Kelly Olynyk after, you know, missing six games and you know, Rodney Magruder, who's missed the whole season, really, like that he was just excited, and you can see that clearly from him. But I don't know that these injuries were too severe. Tyler, in particular, went to the locker room, came back, had an ice on his knee, but he was on the bench. You know, he does have that tendency to play through injury, so I'm sure he probably would have played if it was necessary, if Wade wasn't playing at the level that he was. And as for Ellington, you know, a quad contusion, I wouldn't think that would take him out for too long. He might sit out next Thursday's game, but to be honest, I expect him to be back pretty soon. But a great showing overall. Look, we thought this was a game that they had to win, obviously, against Philadelphia. They've got a nice lead over Detroit, who's currently ninth in the Eastern Conference standings. But in order to catch up to Philadelphia, it's games like this where they need to have a really strong showing. And those turnovers, look, we had talked about the fact that Miami's defense couldn't just rely on bodying up on offensive players. You know, they had to be able to force turnovers. And I think Wade's addition really has changed it. Like, he seems to be gambling a lot, and sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. But more often than not, I think it's kind of rubbed off on the rest of his teammates, where they're kind of just going for steals. Like, you saw that, like they would leave their man sag off of them and all of a sudden attack the ball handler, like if he was being bodied up. Like in a case like of a Winslow on Ben Simmons, he was able to body him up so quickly and so easily that allowed a guy like Richardson or Wade in some cases to kind of poke a hand in there, disrupt the handling, and then, you know, maybe force a steal or a turnover, and it really paid off.
I almost tweeted that in the game. I decided not to, but because it struck me as a little hyperbole, but I almost tweeted, I think Dwayne Wade is having a bigger impact on Miami on defense than he is on offense. And I'm glad I didn't tweet it, because he ended up scoring the last, you know, 15 of the last 17 games. So I was right not to tweet it, and I'm sharing it with you and our listeners now. But I made the same sort of observation. He's having a huge impact defensively, and we'll see if that continues, right? I don't know if it's just a spark of his return or as he continues to get in game shape. I mean, he could maintain that sort of energy on that end, and you hope he does, because that's what it's going to take for Miami to finish this out and get into the playoffs. The Heat now a game behind Philly for the seventh in the East, so they pick up a whole game, right? And they play the 76ers again. They're 1-2 in the series now. They play the 76ers again on March 8th to finish up that four-game series. Also, that's going to be a huge game, so circle that on your calendar. Next up, we'll get to some of your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA, which will be revamping its format. In addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, David and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday. It'll be a digestible show, just 20 or 30 minutes long, delivering the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day.
We've just recorded one earlier today. It was a lot of fun breaking down some of the key stories around the NBA. We talked about Anthony Davis, his huge performance, and his MVP candidacy. You know, Heat fans should remember pretty clearly, because he had a huge game against Miami, unfortunately. So just like Locked On Heat is your daily briefing and all things Miami Heat related, Locked On NBA is your first stop for the most important headlines and analysis from around the NBA. Just leave us a review in iTunes. Please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
All right, let's go to Twitter and see some of the comments and questions you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one, I'm gonna propose this one to you, David. I'm gonna read you two different tweets, and I want you to choose a tweet. Okay, I want you to pick one, the one that you most agree with, right?
Okay.
It's kind of like those tests that you took in like college, where it would say like which one is more right. Sure. There might not be a correct answer, but which one is more right? Omar tweets in, "This is the formula. Get Wade to the fourth quarter, and he will take you home. Granted, he needs to be better also, but this is the formula." That's your first tweet, right?
Okay.
Here's a second tweet from Taylor. "Wade was amazing, but we can't live and die by Wade's 16-footers at the end. It's an inefficient shot. Sometimes it goes in, I guess."
Look, I mean, I think I kind of hinted at this earlier when I brought it up. I'd have to go with Taylor's tweet, to be honest with you, because there are concerns that this shot will not fall. It hasn't fallen for most of his appearances in his six games back. He happened to have a really good game, and that's the reality of who Wade is at 36 years old. He's not going to have these kinds of quote-unquote vintage performances pretty regularly. They're an aberration. They're not the norm anymore. So you kind of have to try to do things better, I think, and not rely on those hard-to-make shots.
Perfect world, you don't rely on Dwayne Wade, obviously. Yeah. There does tend to be from his teammates a little ball watching and like take us home, Absolutely. Dwayne, kind of something happening Absolutely. There. I do think that it comes really at a detriment, I think, to Goran Dragic the most. There was a moment there where Goran Dragic was wide open from in the right corner for a three-pointer, and I think Kelly Olynyk had the ball and just completely – it just didn't see him, just sort of was looking towards Wade's side of the court, and he didn't give it to Wade. He ended up passing it, I think, to James Johnson or somebody else, maybe Josh Richardson, but was just looking into Dwayne Wade's direction and ended up giving it to somebody else near Dwayne Wade and just basically was ignoring Goran Dragic just a few feet away from him, who could have had a wide-open three-pointer from the corner there. And Dragic is a good and efficient – three-point shooter. It would have been a good shot. Certainly better than a long contested step back 18-foot jumper. You know what I mean? That Wade ended up hitting, but he's not going to hit that all the time, to Taylor's point here. I would also say I agree more with Taylor's tweet here. I would say that's the more correct one, but look, I mean, before the Heat reacquired Dwayne Wade, we talked a lot about, look, they just don't have a guy who could sort of just force and create his own shot at the end, and the Heat almost rely too much on ball movement at the end because the shots aren't always there and defenses tighten up at the end. So if Dwayne Wade's feeling it like this, I say, like, why not? I mean, if he's got the hot hand, I say go for it. But you hope that eventually they find some sort of balance where they're able to move the ball a little bit more often and get a little bit more efficient looks from it. But this is why you bring in a guy like Dwayne Wade. This is what the Heat were missing when Deion Waiters went down, and this is sort of what Wade is providing at this point, for better or worse. It's how Miami won 30 games in the final 41 games of last season. It's how the Heat got out to fourth place in the Eastern Conference at some point this season. It's because they were winning close games like this. And this is just sometimes, you know, close games are a matter of luck most of the time anyway. So maybe it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Maybe it doesn't matter if you're getting a wide open three or if you're just getting a contested shot, if it's going to come down to really luck at the end anyway.
You know, as long as everybody else is assertive through the first 3.5 quarters, I guess I don't mind this necessarily. I don't really want them to come down to this close a game. I mean, it's a lot of excitement. And on a night like today, when Wade was able to pull through and they got the win, it's a lot of excitement. So you don't want to be the guy who rains on that parade. But at the same time, it's not sustainable. It really isn't. Look, we talked about this all season long, that the Heat has relied on Wayne Ellington to bail them out because of his three-point shooting. That wasn't really a good plan either. So you don't want to rely on anything. You want to have versatility. You want to have a number of guys that are willing and able to step up in clutch moments. If you're down, if you let an opponent build a big lead against you, and you know Miami hasn't shown that willingness or that ability. Now, Wade can and has shown that willingness. He came through tonight. I don't know if I necessarily want to see that much more often over the next 20-something games.
The Heat ended up closing with Dwayne Wade, Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Kelly Olynyk, Hassan Whiteside. I'll be interested to see if that's the closing lineup going forward as well. And if it is, look, I mean, those are a lot of guys who can sort of force their hand at the end of, the games. You know, Goran Dragic could certainly get going. Josh Richardson, we've seen this season, is not afraid of that moment. Kelly Olynyk can play a big role. at least facilitating at the end. And then, of course, Hassan Whiteside has moments where he's dominant. And that leads us to our next one here from Chris, who writes in, "This game is literally a blueprint for Hassan Whiteside. Can Spo just play him the film of this before every game in practice and just say, you want it, go get it?" And you mentioned earlier, David, you think that he got up and went for this particularly because of his competition in Joel Embiid. You thought he had a little bit more seasoning for this one, right?
I do. I don't want to say I'm an expert in reading body language or anything like that, but we've seen the way Whiteside responds to challenges from opponents, and I think he kind of had a little juice to him because of that. Like, we saw Embiid hit a three-pointer, and immediately on the next possession – Whiteside launches a 17-footer, to kind of respond back. Mm-hmm. He brought a little bit more effort, though, in the long run. And that's the kind of thing that we haven't seen from him. Maybe the injury concerns were much more real and prevalent than we had anticipated, but he did seem like he had a little bit more energy tonight. Now, as far as Chris's point, can this be the blueprint for Whiteside? I'd love that to be the case. We've always wanted that to be the case. It just hasn't been. Like the number one complaint from you and I about Whiteside has always been his lack of effort and engagement. Tonight, it wasn't there. He was fully engaged, but who knows what's going to happen the next time around. If he gets taken out, if he feels like he's not getting a foul call or not getting sufficient playing time, is he going to regress back to the player that he was a couple games ago? That's always been the predicament with Hassan. Unfortunately, you never know what version of him you're going to get. This was a very good and engaged version. His screen setting in particular, he was making contact. He was allowing everybody to kind of have enough time to curl around those screens there. And he was active around the boards as well. So great performance from him. Can't take anything away from that. Just don't know how sustainable it is.
Yeah, we don't know if he's going to get up and go on Thursday against Brooke Lopez as much as he was against Embiid. We don't know if he's going to be as fired up about that matchup. But look, if I'll take a 17-footer or Whiteside pushing it in transition, if it means I'll take that every once in a while. Obviously, you don't want too much of that, but I'll take a couple of those a game if it means we're getting a Whiteside like we did tonight. If it means a more engaged, a more fired up Whiteside, I'll take it. I don't mind him getting those shots off here and there if that's what it's going to take. But you're right. That's what Heat fans have been asking for the entire Hassan Whiteside era, is just do this all the time. All right, we're going to get to our spotlight players next. But before we move on to the final segment, let's go to iTunes and see if we have any new reviews. David, how's it looking?
Not too good. We're still stuck at 89, as we've asked our listeners. We're hoping that they'll help us make the push to 100. We're hoping for it before the end of February, but unfortunately, it doesn't seem like we're going to make it. But let's keep getting those reviews in there. But we got a really good one just recently from Cool with a K Sweat, who writes in, "Great podcast. Best podcast ever. Wes and David are very knowledgeable and give great NBA coverage of the Miami Heat. I listen faithfully to every episode. Keep up the good work, fellas. Thank you so much, Cool Sweat."
Cool Sweat. Appreciate it, Cool Sweat. Thanks for the review. Look, iTunes reviews are a great way to support the podcast. It increases our ranking. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. So leave us a 5-star review and you can get a shout out on the next episode, just like Cool Sweat. Okay, spotlight player time. David, who you got?
I've got Goran Dragic. Finished with an impressive 21 points, second most on the Heat behind Dwayne Wade's 27. 8 of 17 from the field, 3 of 5 from three-point range. Seemed like his shot was falling pretty easily today. 2 of 2 from the line, so still not getting to the free throw line enough, but still a good game overall. Finished with 6 rebounds. That's an impressive showing from him, and 5 assists as well. So he was very, very engaged, getting everybody going. Seemed like he was just very comfortable in that rhythm early on. Did score 8 points in the third quarter, but he didn't have as much of an impact later on. But like that, we were just saying, as long as he's engaged early on and helps Miami kind of stay afloat, which I think he did. Like, he helped Miami when there was a big deficit there. I honestly, in the first quarter, it seemed like Miami was going to get blown out of the water, but then they eventually started chipping away at that lead. And I think it was shooting from Goran Dragic in particular that really helped push Miami back into contention.
Yeah, Goran Dragic's night, 21 points on 16 shots, a nice, or 17 shots, a really tidy kind of efficient scoring night for him, was overshadowed by Dwayne Wade's heroics at the end. But you need Goran Dragic there. I mean, if you're Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade, meaning your leading scorers at 21 and 27 points respectively, is a nice little formula there. If we're going to be talking about formulas, to allude to our last few Twitter questions, But again, you know, Dragic's night a little overshadowed by Wade's, but you're right. He's really kind of the guy who carried the horse for the first three quarters, or the horse that pulled the wagon. I don't know what the thing is, but you know what I'm trying to go with.
Yeah,
he did that for the first three quarters, and then Wade kind of brought him home. My spotlight player is Tyler Johnson. Despite going out early when he hit knees with Ben Simmons, he was also one of, like, along with Goran Dragic, kind of keeping Miami in that game. Absolutely. I mean, he finished 6 of 10 for 16 points. And he looked really strong offensively. Look, we talked about this earlier in the week. If post All-Star game, Tyler Johnson has been one of Miami's best players,
yeah,
especially on offense. And to see that sort of energy he comes out with, he guarded at the other end, he guarded J.J. Redick really well. I thought Redick only finished 2 of 8 from 3-point range. You can't credit Tyler Johnson for all of that, of course, because Tyler did leave early. But early in the game, he made things difficult for Redick. And I thought on both ends, he was pretty strong. He had 2 steals in the game. We mentioned how important the steals and the turnovers are going to be for Miami. So, look, just keep watching Tyler Johnson. He's playing really well right now. And hopefully he bounces back from this injury playing like he did before it. You know,
I mean, 16 points in 22 minutes. So, obviously, very efficient, very effective right away. And 2 3-pointers right at the start of the third quarter when Miami was down 3 points, forcing Brett Brown to take a quick timeout. That kind of shifted the momentum back. You know, you don't want them to get too comfortable. They answered back to their credit, but at the same time, Miami didn't feel like they were out of it at any point, except for that, you know, a brief moment in the first quarter when Philadelphia built an early lead. So, you know, performances like these, they're necessary. If Wade's going to be the de facto closer because nobody else is willing or able at this point, you still need guys to step up. Luckily, it was the backcourt today. Who knows? Maybe it'll be frontcourt players in the future.
Well, the next game for the Heat is Thursday against the Los Angeles Lakers. It'll be game 3 of their homestand that they're on. They're 2-0 in this homestand so far, David. Not bad. We talked about how important the stretch is going to be. They're delivering so far. Lakers on Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow, but that's all we have for today. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.